are you so afraid of? There's something I never told you.
This place, it isn't what you think.
Oh, baby. Get me home.
Give you more time.
Oh, yes.
If you help me.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this movie, everybody. Say what you will. That trailer was pretty fire, especially that song, Jonathan Majors.
It's better than the movie.
There we go. A little preview of what April's thinking on her side. You know what? Really cool trailer, but I didn't love it. I wasn't like super pumped up for this movie. Mm-hmm. I liked the first two Ant-Man films. I actually rewatched the first two the week of the release of this movie. And I think that gave me a little bit different perspective on this film and the way I think about it. Because in some ways, I think watching those first two films kind of hurt this film a little bit. And I'll get into that a little bit more. But I did not, you know, dislike this movie as much as some of the other people online. You, I think, are a little more on the negative side about it.
Correct.
And we have a guest calling in later who really didn't like it. So a little spoiler on how he felt. Speaking of spoilers, guys, this will be a spoiler review. We saw the movie. I actually saw it twice. I was able to get an early screening thanks to our friend Jeff Snyder. And I saw it again with you this past weekend. And, you know, I definitely seen the second time. I had a different feeling about it, and I'll get into that a little bit more as we do the review. But yeah, I guess we'll just start off with our overall thoughts. I'll give you my overall thoughts for the both times I saw it, and then we'll get into what you're gonna say, which I'm sure is gonna be a lot. The first time, and I said this after, I think I told you this after I saw the film, like, it's a lot to take in the first half hour. The movie is just kind of jumping around all over the place, and I remember in the first act thinking to myself, like, this movie needs to just calm down and give me like some stakes and put these people where they need to be. It felt like it was all over the place in a lot of ways. And then I think once Jonathan Majors, who is the new big baddie in Marvel, Kang is introduced in this movie, it really kind of gave me something to latch on to and be like, okay, there's the bad guy. What do they need to do? And so to me, after the first viewing, I came out of it like, wow, that's a very different Ant-Man movie. But it was still very funny, which I think is crucial when you're making an Ant-Man movie, because I think Paul Rudd is such a good comedic actor that to not make this movie a comedy first and foremost would hurt the Ant-Man, you know, saga. Just because Paul Rudd just is, even in the most dramatic scenes, he comes off really likable and funny. And I think he just has a certain kind of charm to him that very few actors have. And his sense of humor, for me, works. I'm just such a big Paul Rudd fan that
I can see it in your eyes when we go to movies. Like, I'm like, I see this bromance here. Like, you clearly love this dude.
I think a lot of guys feel that way. After I Love You, Man is like one of those really great comedy. But I remember watching Civil War, and this was the first time that he had showed up in the MCU since becoming Ant-Man. And I'll never forget being in that theater. And when he comes out of that van, the whole audience you felt the whole audience like start to giggle, and you felt the mood. I think there were some cheers. You just felt like, oh, it was like seeing your best friend showing up in a Marvel movie. I guess that's the only way. Cause yes, Chris Evans is like, you know, Captain America, you know, Robert Downey Jr. has been a movie star for so long. When Paul Rudd shows up in Civil War, it felt like your friend just showed up in a Marvel movie.
He's just pure light, like, and goodness.
Because he's not as big of an actor as those other actors, it felt like one of us geeks or one of your best friends somehow snuck into a Marvel movie. And he has maybe my favorite line reading in that film is when Captain America loses his shield. And Paul Rudd comes up, he's like, here's your shield, Captain America. But he says it in like a Saturday morning cartoon way. Mm-hmm. And I remember just to this day, that is one of my favorite lines in any of the Marvel movies. So I love the spice that Paul Rudd brings to the MCU. So when you get these standalone Ant-Man movies, I'm always excited because I just get to spend time with that character. I get to spend time with Paul Rudd. And after watching those first two films, they are so grounded in reality. They both take place in San Francisco. You know, he's just a criminal who's kind of thrown into this Marvel universe. This is the first movie that takes him out of that element and puts him in a full gonzo sci-fi Marvel fantasy film. And I think that's why a lot of people are not digging it. And I think if you love the first two movies, like our friend Jeff Snyder, I saw it with, loves the first two Ant-Man. He thinks the first Ant-Man movie is the best Marvel movie. And this is not what he signed up for when he went for a third Ant-Man film. Now, Marvel's done this before. We were talking earlier, and you said, you know, they did this with Thor. Thor Ragnarok changed. It became a sci-fi fantasy in a much different way. So in some ways, I understand why Marvel did it. And this is the start of Phase 5. And I think the main thing is this movie is a setup for Kang, played by Jonathan Majors, who's a highlight. So yeah, I feel like I'm talking too much. So my overall reaction, I liked it the first time, but I thought it was kind of a mess. The second time, knowing what I was going to get, I liked it a little bit more, but I still recognize that it is not like top tier Marvel.
All right. So I really miss the kind of smaller stakes of the other films, where this one, as you said before, is just a complete change. The CGI space world kind of feels like Guardians of the Galaxy or Thor Ragnarok with like the color schemes.
I'd argue even more extreme.
Yeah, so I feel like I've seen that before. And when we talk about the villain, I mean, if you're an MCU fan, you already know basically that outcome, that he's not going to beat him. You know, like we know the setup for Kang, that he's going to be used in these future MCU films. So I feel like it takes away a lot of the stakes in that regard.
Well, again, this is a spoiler review, guys. If you haven't seen the movie yet, obviously don't listen forward. This is for only the people that have actually seen the film. Now, in a way, he does defeat this Kang. He defeats him at the end. He is killed. Or at least that's what we're told. And then we are introduced in the after credits scene to all these other Kangs. So he was beaten a variant of Kang. And the first Kang that we ever met was the one in Loki, the end of season one of Loki. Mm-hmm. And he even, that Kang is warning you that you could, you know, don't kill me or else you could mess up the whole timeline. And unfortunately, Loki's, you know, multiverse female version takes him out. And is that who kills him? I think she's the one that kills him, right?
I think so.
Yeah, it's been a while since I watched it, Loki season one. So, again, while as far as we know, the Kang that we met in this movie might have died, and the Kang we're going to get in the first Avengers film to come out after Phase 6, or that will end Phase 6, might be a different Kang. Now, I hope it is the same Kang, because I like meeting this Kang and getting to know why he's so evil and like why he was a very threatening villain. So
I think he was the best part of the film.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of people who reviewed this movie. That's the most positive thing they said. Whether you like the movie or not, Jonathan Majors is a major talent, and he is really threatening as Kang. But I also listened to Dan Merle's review, his spoiler review, and he said something that I felt the same way about was, are we going to get the same Kang, or are we going to get a different version of Kang? And does it really matter? Because he was saying, like, I like the fact that, like, imagine Thanos is the first time you meet him, he dies, and then you get a new one. Like, but actually, you know what? In Endgame, you kind of got a new Thanos. Mm-hmm. They time traveled back, so it was the Thanos, but it wasn't the same Thanos that went through everything from Infinity War. Interesting. So maybe I wonder if some people are thinking this Kang character is kind of a repeat of Thanos in some ways. Because it seems like they're taking that same roadmap in some ways. What do you think? You're just looking at me. You're like, you ever see that meme of Charlie Day where he's like looking at the board?
Uh-huh.
He's like, just like, yo, what about this one? I feel like I just did like a podcast version of that. Like pointing at all the things like, what if this is connected? Wait, what if they're doing that? Throwing a lot at you.
So anyways, back to why I didn't really care okay. for this movie.
Go ahead.
I feel like there was no real standout fight scene for me. Agreed. Or any real scenes in general that when you look at a movie, right, and you see it on your shelf, you think, oh, I want to watch this movie because of these scenes.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any scenes in this movie that I want to even go back to regularly.
That's interesting. I think, again, to me, it would be for the jokes, actually, more than it would be the action scenes or that weird fantasy world. Because I do think this is a very funny movie at times. And I think Paul Rudd, like, the scene where there's multiple you know, Scott Lang's, and all of a sudden the Baskin Robbins one shows up. He's like, why am I here? Like, those little jokes to me, I really enjoy. I enjoy Paul Rudd's delivery. A lot of the stuff between him and MODOK in this movie, I think, is really funny. Every time MODOK was on screen, I was laughing.
So MODOK worked for you?
He worked for me. And I know some people, there seems to be a lot of team MODOK or team not MODOK. I am team MODOK. I thought he was hilarious. I think Corey Stoll has a really great delivery as MODOK. One of my favorite scenes is when he goes into get the little engine for the time machine. He keeps saying, Darren, am I in the right place? Then you see him kind of realize, MODOK, he's like, yep, immediately. That comedic timing to me is just what Paul Rudd pulls off so well. And the director, Peyton Reed, you know, started with comedies. And mm-hmm. you can still see, even though he's making this weird Star Wars type movie in the Ant-Man universe, they never lose track of that humor that was in the first two films. I will agree with you, though, the action at times is not as memorable as the last films. And I think the reason for that is when you're in the real world, our world, and you shrink down, you see a giant, you know, spoon or a rat the size of, you know, a dragon. You see him grow tall. He's standing next to buildings that we know as like, oh my God, there's a giant human there. In this movie, when you're surrounded by CG weirdness, the only way I knew that he was big was because they slowed him down.
It was like thumps.
They had to use, instead of using the visuals of somebody shrinking in our world, when they did it in that movie, they had to use sound design and like different angles, and people had to be like, oh my God, he's gotten big, because you lose that scale of the regular world, which I think the first two films, they play around with a lot. Like that first fight in a suitcase and there's like an iPod playing music, like that.
Thomas the Train.
Yeah, Thomas the Train, exactly. I love that use of that stuff in those first two films, which, like I said, I watched right before this one, and you definitely lose that in this movie because of the... I mean, this movie's like Avatar. The whole thing is literally shot in the CGI world. There's almost...
And I would argue bad CGI.
I wouldn't say bad, because I think if you're going to say bad, maybe some of the CGI characters are... Like the broccoli guy didn't look great to me. But I think the world looked really beautiful at times and looked really cool and exotic. The problem is they're not making a space opera. They're literally in something that we've never seen before. So it felt like almost like you're inside a body or something, like a cosmic, mm-hmm. weird genetic thing. So I think it was kind of cool how creative they got at times. But at times, again, it didn't really feel like it belonged in an Ant-Man movie. And I think that's the problem with this film, is it feels more like a Marvel movie than an Ant-Man movie. And it has some of that issues I think that Iron Man 2 had, where it's like a lot of setup. And they're just kind of like, let's use this character Ant-Man to set up Phase 5, which Kevin Feige even went on record and said, hey, he deserves to, you know, have his own movie at this epic scale and giant CGI. And this, the budget on this one was huge compared to the last two films.
Mm-hmm.
So I give him some credit for taking a swing. And instead of giving this to like Doctor Strange, which we just saw Multiverse of Madness, or one of the bigger characters, they gave it to Ant-Man. But maybe you lose some of the charm of what Ant-Man movies are when you do that. Anything, any comment on that?
I totally agree.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
100%. Okay. I'm glad. What else didn't work for you in this movie?
Catherine Newton.
Yeah. You know, I kind of agree with that. I said that to Jeff as soon as we left the theater. And I don't dislike her as an actress.
Mm-hmm.
I just, what about her performance didn't quite ring true for you?
I don't know. I think her in the CGI world, like, it felt like she didn't know how to interact with things yet, like how to be in that, when working with the green screen, which, you know, that's what she was doing. I feel like she wasn't really comfortable with that yet.
It's weird because she felt like she was kind of being comedic at all times. Like, I never felt like she had like a real serious moment. And when she did have like that speech towards the end of the movie where she's calling everybody to come fight Kang, she felt like she knew she was in like a fun comedy, but it never felt grounded. Her performance never really felt grounded to mm-hmm. me. She never felt like she was taking anything too seriously. Yeah, there's something off about the performance, and I don't know if I blame her. It's the director. Again, this is the first time she's been in something that's like complete CGI world, so maybe it was just something that was a little bit new for her as an actress. But yeah, I don't know. Something.
I mean,
just...
there was quite a bit in Pokemon, but
yeah,
not that level.
Not that level, yeah. That's a good point. But yeah, I don't know. But she wasn't the star then. I would argue she's like the co-star of this movie. Mm-hmm. It's Michelle. I think that one thing I will say, Michelle Pfeiffer's awesome in this.
Yeah.
I think Michael Douglas was really fun also.
He was having a good time with those ants.
Yeah, and Michael Douglas still has it, man. He's able to bring that Michael Douglas charm. I will say Evangeline Lilly doesn't have as much to do in this one as the last one.
Yeah.
But I think that's because Cassie kind of replaces her in some ways in this movie. But that doesn't mean Evangeline Lilly doesn't have a couple cool scenes. Like, she still gets to be a badass a few times in the movie. But It really is, the story is not about Hope and Scott. This is really about Cassie and Scott. And then Kang being the big bad guy.
I feel like Paul Rudd's love for his daughter was like shoved down our throat so hard. Like everything.
This one?
Yeah, like everything was so clear. It's like, I'm doing this for Cassie. Where's Cassie? Blah, blah, blah. Always about her. And I was like, yes, I get it. The importance of family. Like,
I feel like that's definitely.
It felt overdone though.
Interesting. Because that's definitely a thing that goes through the first two films after rewatching. The first two, it is pretty prevalent in the first two films also, But because she's a little girl, she's not as much of a character. So this one, I will say the one scene that did really work for me is like, I told you earlier when he goes down, he starts multiplying and like he's getting overcome by all these multiple possibilities and the Baskin Robbins version shows up. I do like that moment though, when they all start working together. All because they have the same goal. They want to get to Cassie. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really cool moment that worked for me in the moment when I saw a film. I was like, oh, that's really sweet. What did you think?
It was all right.
It was all right. Did you find it funny, interesting visually? And are you just kind of like, what's going on here?
I just feel like I've seen so much multiverse stuff lately that like I'm almost unfazed by it now. Like after watching Everything Everywhere All at Once, I feel like I've seen all the multiverse things that you can throw at me, though, just the weirdest shit. So I'm not fazed by it anymore. It doesn't feel original. It just feels like it's starting to feel like what people would say about Marvel, like a long time ago, even where they were like, oh, they washed up. They keep doing the same like stories that like all of them feel like a copy of themselves. The palette looks the same. And I'm starting to feel that way now. I think I'm getting Marvel fatigue.
For me, it's not so much the visuals as much as like Avengers. And I guess Disney keeps doing this thing where the character is like attacking a large evil force and they think they're going to lose. And then all of a sudden, oh no, here come all the guys that we didn't think were going to show up to save the day. Mm-hmm. It happened in Rise of Skywalker. It happens in this movie when Lang is, you know, charging the four as big, giant Ant-Man. And then all of a sudden, all the people show up at the last second. It reminded me of Ready Player One, where it's like everyone shows up to like take on the big bad guy. I think that trope, it's not just Marvel and it's not just Disney, but I would like to think that screenwriters get a little bit more inventive than keep doing that at the end of a movie, because Star Wars is the one that did it originally. You know, like, I don't know. It happens so many times in movies these days. It feels lazy, kind of. And I wish they would get more imaginative. Well, I think the final battle where he does attack his giant Scott Lang, I think has some cool stuff in there. I think the fight between him and Jonathan Majors at the end is pretty brutal. And Paul Rudd, there's no jokes going on there. He's getting his ass whooped. He's bleeding. And that's where I really felt Jonathan Majors was imposing his power and will onto this, you know, character that we love. And Scott Lang really, he gets a few punches in, but he doesn't really have a chance. Mm-hmm. He's like, come on, Ant-Man. And the way he says Ant-Man in this movie, it's like insulting.
It's degrading.
Yeah, what are you going to do, Ant-Man? I know, I just love that. And again, the humor for me really did work in this movie. And the scene where he's like, which one are you going to do, the one with the hammer? He's like, no, it's Thor, but you know.
Same body type.
That kind of stuff I love. So again, I was overall, I don't think this is top tier Marvel. I think it's middle tier. Like, it's middle,
bottom. I think it's bottom, middle tier.
I would just say middle. I wouldn't put it high middle or low middle. I would just say middle. But a lot of people feel like you do or worse. And we're actually going to call a friend of ours, Alex Robinson, critic. You can catch him on YouTube. I'll let him plug all his stuff. Let's go ahead and give him a call. Let's see if this still works. We're going to try our best here. Oh, it's ringing. It's working. I hope we got the right number. That was my favorite part. will they pick up?
The anticipation.
Hello.
Hey, what's up, Alex? Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you guys.
Awesome. So we were just spending the last 15 minutes talking about Ant-Man. I'll just give you a quick recap. I think, you know, I've seen your tweets. I kind of know where you stand, but I'm excited for the audience to hear it. I think this is kind of middle of the road Marvel movie. I think it is the humor from the first two films kind of carries over, and that's really what worked most for me. I think the visuals are a little bit of a mixed bag. We both agree Jonathan Majors is really good as the villain, but April is pretty negative on the film, right? April, you'd say you're pretty, it's lower tier. Yeah,
it's very low tier.
Where would you put this movie, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, where would you put it?
So out of everything MCU related, like TV shows, movies, special presentations, this is actually like bottom of the barrel. Like it's my least favorite in the entire franchise.
Wow.
The entire MCU.
Yes. But that being said, there's only about two, maybe three other movies that I just think are okay. And at worst, this is just like, this isn't an awful movie.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that.
So bottom tier, like worst thing in the MCU for me, like average compared to everything else.
Okay. That makes me feel a little bit better. Did you like this more or less than Thor Love and Thunder?
Right now I like it a little less, but Thor Love and Thunder is a movie that has not really aged well for me.
And it's not even that old of a movie.
No.
But I agree with you, Alex, because I really didn't. I remember walking out of Thor Love and Thunder, and after about every minute after walking out of theater, I liked it less. And I tried rewatching it at home, and I honestly had trouble getting through it. I think Thor Love and Thunder is probably, for me, towards the bottom of the barrel of MCU movies. So for me, this is definitely a step up. Now I'm curious, what is it about this movie that just really puts it towards the bottom for you? Even though you said it's not an awful movie.
I mean, I think the biggest issue for me is that it feels like more of a setup movie for Kang. It doesn't really commit to any of the Ant-Man stuff from the previous two movies. I mean, I don't have a problem with it being a grander movie and bigger scale, because you got to, you know, third movie in a series that most people, I think everyone, most people would categorize the Ant-Man franchise as kind of lesser MCU.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to do something to spice it up a bit. But I just felt more of the focus was on setting up Kang and the Kang dynasty more than like actually being third to this Ant-Man trilogy.
I agree, and I was telling you earlier, so I rewatched the first two Ant-Man leading up to this one, and they definitely feel like a very different film. I think Marvel just really was like, hey, let's give Ant-Man one of these big summer-type movies instead of him being kind of like this second-tier Marvel character. I think Kevin Feige even said like he deserved to have this kind of movie. But I think you do lose some of the charm of why I would go to an Ant-Man movie. Those movies are cool. You know, I love the visual effects and him shrinking down. But to me, they are comedies first and foremost. And I think one thing this movie does do well, even though it's in a totally different setting, I did laugh for a good majority of this film. Like, the jokes really worked for me. Did you feel the humor worked for you in this film as much as the first two?
Not really. There were maybe a few points that made me laugh, but I can't, like, I could pick out something off the top of my head instantly. Yeah? Like, I mean, for Thor, Love, and Thunder, there's at least a few moments that did make me laugh that I remember.
Okay.
But with Quantumania, I really couldn't think of any. Like, for me, Quantumania makes the biggest sin of making Bill Murray not funny, because usually for me, every time Bill Murray's on screen, even when he's like not really like trying to be funny, he's just naturally funny. Yeah,
he had a little bit of a charm to him, but like it was such a small dose and so quick. Like, I really thought when he showed up, he would... I thought he'd be in the movie more. Like, I thought, okay, this is the introduction to this character. I'm curious to see where it goes. Like, there could have been some fun things with him and Michelle Pfeiffer back when they get to the other, you know, Kang lair. But, yeah, it does feel kind of wasted there. I think the big question that I have to ask you, are you Team MODOK or no?
I don't know, because you can't really say MODOK looks ugly or looks terrible, because that's his design.
Yeah.
So it's like you kind of have to – you kind of feel like an idiot for saying that. But I would say I'm somewhere in the middle, because MODOK is just kind of a character that I don't think can be translated in live action. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they tried it. They did it, but I don't think it really succeeded.
See, I'll say this. The reason why I liked MODOK in this film is because he is literally a joke. I think he's a joke throughout the whole movie. And when you say, like, you didn't... For me, one of the biggest laughs in the theater for me, and that when I saw it again, I saw it twice because I saw early screening, then I saw it again with April. The last death scene with MODOK I thought was hysterical when he goes, you know, I did it. At least I'm going to die an Avenger. And Paul Rudd's like, yeah, you're in. Yep. Like, I just thought, like, even his death was played as a joke. So for me, mainly it was successful. The whole scene where, you know, Cassie's like, he's like, I'm a dick. Like, I don't know. It all worked for me. And I thought it was all really funny. MODOK is a ridiculous character. So I think this was a good way of using that ridiculous character to be the butt of every joke.
I can see that. I mean, I think maybe I was just more thrown off of the way he looks. Like, I kind of, in terms of, like, Corey Stahl's, like, basically just a giant CG head.
Yeah, he did look weird.
Like, I think it did. Maybe there would have been a way to do it practically, like, just kind of, I don't know, maybe it would look cheaper, but wrap his entire body, like, in green. And just kind of put like a tiny MODOK costume around his head. It probably would have looked cheaper, but
yeah,
I think it would have probably looked a little less uncanny, if you get what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's hard because, like you said, the design of that character is so insane. Like, I understand why they went the CGI route. But I just think Corey Stoll has good delivery in this movie. I just think he did as good a job as he could as far as playing a giant CG head.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you got to make do with what you got.
Yeah, so let's talk about Jonathan Majors. We didn't really get a chance to talk about him too much before you jumped on. How do you feel he's going to be as... Because he is the new baddie. He is like the new Thanos of the MCU. This is obviously just an introduction to him. Did he make a lasting impression on you? And are you excited to see him in future films, including Avengers, the Kang Dynasty?
He certainly did. I mean, I will say this, like, because he was actually the villain of this movie, he got a lot more to do than Thanos did leading up to Infinity War and Endgame. Because Thanos was always, like, in small segments, people talked about him. So he got built up in a certain different way. Because this is a different variant of Kang, and this is the multiverse saga, thought it was a pretty clever idea to just have him flat out be the villain and know that, like, this is just one of many.
Yeah, and I'm curious. So we were talking earlier, Scott Lang defeats this Kang. Do you think he's defeated? Do you think he will come back and be the Kang that shows up in the later films? Or do you think that variant has been taken out and that the Kang that they're going to deal with are totally different ones? Which the after credits kind of hints at.
I feel like it might be what you suggested, the latter. Like, there might be a Kang variant out there that's more dangerous. Mm. Like, something worse than what He Who Remains, I guess, described in Loki. Because it's been a while since I've seen Loki, but
yeah,
He Who Remains was pretty much trying to keep everything in line so other Kangs wouldn't, like, break free. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. We were talking about it earlier a little bit because it's been a while since we watched the first season. And once that Kang is killed, that's kind of what makes everything possible, I believe.
Yeah.
So we've seen two Kangs die, basically, so far. So I guess, yeah, maybe it will be a different Kang, a more powerful one. But yeah, like, I will say the after credit scene was, like, kind of weird and kind of crazy. Like, one was, like, a pharaoh, and then there's a whole, like, stadium full of them. Like, I have no idea where the Kang Dynasty is going to go. But I feel like Jonathan Majors is going to have a lot of fun playing this role because he's going to be able to play, it looks like, a lot of different versions of this one character that we know as Kang.
Yeah. There's going to be a Kang who's a boxer and he has to fight Killmonger.
Yep. Perfect.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Creed 3. I can't wait. Yeah. So overall, you were pretty disappointed by this movie. Do you think if they do make another Ant-Man film, they should go back to the real world, go back to San Francisco? Do you feel like this movie just kind of went too far outside of what you think an Ant-Man movie should be?
I wouldn't go that far, because it is nice to get some sort of variety within these, like, mini series in the MCU.
Agreed.
And the thing is, like, this being my least favorite doesn't mean that I've, like, given up. Like, I've given up on Ant-Man. Like, you know what? Marvel's been really good at learning from some of their lesser products or movies and shows. And they're like, okay, we're going to learn from this and move forward. We're going to improve what comes next. So whatever they do next with Ant-Man, I'm looking forward to it.
And, you know, I'll say this. I'm curious down the road, maybe a few years from now, I feel like you will throw Ant-Man in the Quantumania film in your, you know, say you have it in your collection. It's going to feel a lot different than some of these other Marvel films. I think even Multiverse of Madness, which gets pretty crazy, the fact that you're 5 minutes in the real world and then the rest of this movie is basically CGI world until the very last 5 minutes, I think makes it kind of unique and different than, honestly, any of the other movies that we've gotten in the MCU so far. I mean, don't get me wrong, Guardians, you're in space and all that, but the quantum realm, which they're in, we never really saw anything quite like it in MCU until this movie. And I think it's throwing some people off.
It could be, yeah. I mean, and also, there's, like, I've heard people say, oh, this is one movie you should just skip entirely.
Wow.
Well, the thing is, I wouldn't say that because, as we saw with the Infinity Saga, there were movies like Thor the Dark World where I was like, well, there's no real need to watch this. And then when you get to Endgame, you're like, oh, no, there's a reason you need to watch this one because there's a big payoff.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so I feel like as much as I'm not a fan of Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, it's going to be important. Like people saying, oh, you can skip this one. When we get to Kang Dynasty, there's going to be a people are going to look back and go, oh, there actually was something. Mm. There was a reason to watch this.
Yeah, maybe it's, you know, a piece of the puzzle that'll be better once the puzzle is fully put together. I will say, though, Thor Love and Thunder, I think you can kind of skip that one. All you need to know is that he has a daughter by the end. Outside of that, I don't know what else you're getting out of it.
We'll see, but I could definitely agree with that because, I mean, Multiverse of Madness, Ant-Man Wasp Quantumania, Loki, all of them feel like they're part of, like, the grander multiverse, and mm-hmm. Spider-Man No Way Home as well.
Oh, yeah.
Thor Love and Thunder just kind of felt like a random adventure movie.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I'm hoping that, again, I do think the last Phase 4, it felt kind of all over the place. And with Phase 5 beginning with, you know, building up to Phase 6 in the Kang Dynasty Avengers film, I'm looking forward to having that connective tissue that we would get with the stones. The stones, the Infinity Stones are such a, like, they're just rocks, but the way they played into the first couple phases, it really did feel like there was a grander story and a place that you're going to end up. And I feel like Phase 4 really kind of went away from that. And I'm really hoping Phase 5 continues this path of, hey, this is all going to lead to something. Guardians, because it's, you know, I think Guardians is the next film up. That is,
yeah.
And then that's James Gunn kind of closing out the trilogy. So maybe it won't lead into the bigger picture as much. But I'm willing to give that a pass because I think it's James Gunn saying goodbye.
pretty much like, goodbye, I'm moving over to DC.
Yes, I'm heading to DC.
I will say, I have kind of a counterpoint to what you said about like Phase 4, like kind of being not as relevant as like Phase 5 in terms of setting up what's to come. Phase 1 kind of was pretty much, let's just set up the Avengers. Yeah. And it wasn't until Thor the Dark World, the mid-credit scene, where we got a real grasp on what's coming up next. And, like, we didn't know about the Infinity Stones until Thor the Dark World. So I look at Phase 4 as more like the cool down, relax, let's catch up with some of these characters and how they're going through the events of Endgame. And let's introduce some new people.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Shang-Chi. And I think, you know, out of all the new characters that's been introduced, he's the one I'm kind of most excited for a sequel. And to see, I think, you know, what we all love about that first few phases was when you got to Infinity War, we got to see Doctor Strange, Iron Man, and the Guardians in a room together. And that's why I feel like right now, you know, we're going to Guardians. We had Multiverse with Doctor Strange. We had Love and Thunder. I want to see some more new characters introduced, like Shang-Chi. That's why I'm looking forward to the new Blade film. But I want them to start adding these new legacy characters, so when we get to the new Avengers film, we're going to have these new characters interacting with the old characters. And, of course, the Fantastic Four is going to be right before. I think it's Fantastic Four is like the one that's starting off Phase 6, so I think that's going to be huge for the MCU.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how they wrap everything up. It's never going to wrap up. How they build up to Kang Dynasty and even Secret Wars.
Oh God, yeah, Secret Wars. Like, I can't wrap my head around that. I just need to make it to the Kang Dynasty first, and then we'll think about that one. All right, Alex, thanks so much for joining us. Overall, you're saying this is lower tier MCU for you, but not a horrible movie. Because according to you, even the lower tier is a pretty average movie.
Yeah, basically.
Perfect. Anything you want to plug before we let you go?
Yeah, my YouTube channel. I've dropped my name, the real Mr. Robinson name for the channel. It's now simply Alexander Robinson. Though I think since I was last on the podcast, that YouTube has added handles like Twitter and Instagram. Yeah. So you can still type in the real Mr. Robinson and find me because the handle hasn't changed. I'm currently going through all the Scream sequels in prep for Scream 6. As we're recording this, I'm about to record my review for Scream 3, and I would imagine by the time this episode's up, that video review will be up as well.
Awesome. I will say I'm a little worried about the new Scream only because they made it within a year of the last one. Like, it's rare these days for a movie to come out and then a year later the sequel comes out.
That's true.
So let's hope they got the script and it wasn't a rush job. But they're in New York. Jason Takes Manhattan, you know, it's a horror.
I was just going to say, like, at the very least, it has to be better than Jason Takes Manhattan.
100%. All right, Alex. Well, thanks so much for calling, buddy. We'll definitely have you on again. And hopefully you like the next Ant-Man movie more.
I'm looking forward to it. So thank you.
All right. Later, buddy.
Bye.
All right. Bye, guys.
All right. Mr. Alex Robinson coming in. So even though he says it's lower tier, he still doesn't think it was a bad movie.
Every point he made, I agreed with.
Yeah. I know. That's why he didn't say much. You're just like, yep.
I was nodding along with him.
Yeah. But you know what? That's what the crazy thing about Marvel is. Let's just talk about this for a second. What would you say out of the Marvel films are some of the lower tier for you? I'll start to give you a chance to think. So obviously,
I already have one.
All right.
Thor Dark World.
See, I am one of those people who like Thor the Dark World. I think it's
good for you.
Yeah, I definitely like it more than Love and Thunder. Because it is the closest things we got to a Lord of the Rings type movie inside the MCU. And I think some of the best Loki stuff is actually in that movie. I think him and Loki's relationship are really fun in that movie. Is not as fun as Thor Ragnarok by far. Thor Ragnarok is the best of the Thor movies. But I actually would probably take Thor Dark World over the first Thor movie. I think the first Thor movie starts off good, but then there's
I think the first two are blah.
Blah overall.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel. Yeah, one of those movies,
mine too.
Yeah, I didn't really like it when I saw it in theaters, and like I have trouble. I've tried rewatching it at home, and it's not even that it's like horrible. It's just kind of boring, mm-hmm. and I don't even know. I don't blame the star Brie Larson. I don't know. I want to think maybe it's more of the directors just weren't ready for a Marvel movie. This is back when, you know, Marvel still does this. They pull these indie directors and they throw them into the Marvel machine. And for some people, like James Gunn was not a big name director until he made Guardians, but he made all these cool indie horror films. Sometimes it works out. The guy who did Shang-Chi, I can't remember his name, but he directed, you know, a small indie film with Brie Larson, The Glass House. No, it's not called The Glass House. It's called, oh, it's The Glass something. Anyway, really good movie. I can't remember the title. Sometimes these indie directors, they come in and they absolutely kill it. And then sometimes they come in and they do Captain Marvel. Or even though we like The Eternals, a lot of people did not like Eternals. But they grabbed Chloe Zhao off an Oscar before she won her Oscar.
I don't know if it's fair to say I liked Eternals. Like, I just didn't, like, hate it the way a lot of people did. I was like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was, I'd go a little higher than fine. I enjoyed it, but I don't think it's top tier Marvel, for mm-hmm. sure. It's like middle, right there with Quantumania. But I watch Eternals, I watch Quantumania, and they're two just totally very different movies. Mm-hmm. And they both are trying very different things. And they don't always succeed at what they're trying to do, which I think makes them a mixed bag in a lot of ways. So yeah, anything else is like bottom tier Marvel for you that comes to mind? Captain Marvel, for me, Love and Thunder. You said Thor Dark World. Anything else kind of reach out there?
No.
Yeah, and that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for Marvel, like, their batting average is better than I think any other franchise or studio when it comes to creating the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And even their worst movies are watchable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we'll see. I think their next one, Guardians, is going to be a huge hit. I think James Gunn knows it's his last rodeo. I think he's going to make you cry. I'm so excited. He's going to make you laugh. Yeah.
Rocket's going to die, calling it now.
Yeah. That's what everyone's saying from the trailer. But who knows? James Gunn might throw a little swerve in there. It might be somebody else. Might be Groot, and then Rocket survives.
You can't kill Groot.
I think you could. I think you could burn him to a crisp.
No.
No? Okay.
He's too profitable.
I'm trying to think, what's after Guardians? Is there a third film this year? There's got to be.
There is in November, but I forgot what it is.
Oh, it's the Marvels.
Yeah.
That's right. She's back. And this one, I think, is going to be a lot funner because they're introducing Miss Marvel from the TV show into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you got Monica Rambeau. I think her name is Monica Rambeau. But you got her who got her powers in the WandaVision series.
Mm-hmm.
So I think by Brie Larson not having to carry the movie by herself, and the actress who plays Miss Marvel, I think, is just so charismatic and funny that she's going to bring a lot of humor to that film. And I think their chemistry is obviously going to kind of – it's going to make or break the movie, but I think it's going to be good. At least that's what I'm hoping. Are you excited for the Marvels?
No. Not, like, at all.
At all? I understand. You know what? And I understand that because I didn't love the first Captain Marvel movie, but I really liked Miss Marvel. So, like – for me, I'm more excited for her to be in a big budget film and see her comedic timing. Because I just thought she was so funny and charismatic in that show.
I just sound like a crotchety old woman. Can we, like, review an A24 movie so I can actually have, like, more opinions and
all right,
whatnot?
Everything Everywhere All at Once. We're sticking to the multiverse. All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Everybody's a Critic. Talking about Ant-Man Quantumania.
Wait.
What? What about wait? What?
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Wait, oh, yes, and the Wasp. I mean, listen.
Why are you taking out the woman?
Because the movie basically took her out. I'm just trying to. And it's just a long sentence. And
I know. I know that's hard for you.
It is. It really is.
Long sentences.
They very much are. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. As usual, we're going to use my old catchphrase, but I'm going to let April do it. Do the catchphrase.
Keep watching those movies.
Yeah, she got it.